I'm Martha Foley. Welcome to our regional history call-in on summer camps in the North Country. Summer camps, a tradition that began in the 1880s and continues strong today, though very different from how it was in its founding years. With me tonight is Hallie Bond, a curator at the Adirondack Museum. The museum is planning a major exhibit on children's camps in the Adirondacks in the coming years. And Amy Godine is across the table from me, a journalist with an interest in social history. Amy was here for our very first regional history call-in on the ethnic history of the North Country, and her interest in camps with an ethnic identity is part of that broader specialty, I guess you could say. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hiya.
You know, I sort of feel like we should start with a song.
I wasn't a camper. I didn't have to do it.
Well, we all didn't go to the same camp anyway, so we wouldn't have the same song. But maybe we'll close with a song at the end. You know, someone can start us off by calling in with their camp songs. The idea tonight is to talk about summer camps that grew up in the Adirondacks, changed over the years, flourished, died, continued. And we'd like to hear memories and stories, anecdotes from our listeners tonight. So at any point, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. We have an 800 number, and it's 800-388-6758, 1-800-388-6758, if you'd like to tell us about the summer camp that lives in your memory. I want to ask Hallie first, since you're the doing the sort of the basic research, I take it, for some of the museum's exhibit. I know that some of the oldest camps in the country are actually Adirondack camps. Camp Dudley is one of the first camps.
Yes, Camp Dudley is, in fact, the oldest camp operating right now. And it followed very shortly establishment of what is regarded as the first children's camp in the country, which was Camp Jacoro in New Hampshire, founded in 1881. Didn't last very long. Camp Dudley was founded in 1885 and is, as you say, still growing today.
Yeah, still flourishing. Well, why did camps start to spring up at that point? Was this another sort of result of the new affluence of the Industrial Revolution and so on and so forth?
Yes, I think there are a number of contributing factors. One is, as you point out, there were people who could afford to send their children away for a vacation, away from the family for, at that time, 8 or 9 weeks during the summer. There was also a very strong feeling in urban areas, and most of these kids did come from urban areas, that that on the one hand, the children had to be protected from what one person called the dust, dirt, and dangers of the city. And I think one of those dangers they might have considered was the influx of people who weren't like us, all the immigrants, because the 90s, right on the turn of the century, was really the greatest period of immigration from Eastern Europe and people who were identifiably different from the people who had been leading the society. And there's along with this, there's a very strong emphasis at this time on building character and the feeling that and it was boys at first. Boys were getting too soft, and they needed to get back in touch with nature that made America great and the pioneer virtues and all that sort of thing.
So is that where the tradition of, you know, 6:30 in the morning swims and mandatory this and mandatory that comes from?
Yes, and schedule was a very important thing. We've been looking at some brochures here tonight, and all of these early camps tell you exactly what those kids are going to be doing every half hour.
Starting with reveille and ending with taps, which is very military in my life.
Right, very militaristic, many of them.
Even I went to a little summer camp, a 4-H camp, outside the Adirondack Park, but in southern Saratoga County. And it was not a grand camp by any stretch of the imagination, but it was wonderful for us. And we started with some poor kid playing, you know, the bugle in the morning. It was an honor, right? Exactly. He probably got free tuition or something, you know, for playing that every morning. And then we went for our polar bear swim, you know, at 7 or some god awful time.
How horrible!
But it built character, as you can see, right?
Yes, a lot of characters, right?
But I think there was an interesting change as time went on. I mean, by the teens and 20s, the clientele was, especially in the Adirondacks, quite affluent. And some of these camps, if you read their brochures and advertising material, really begin to look like finishing schools. And teaching you all sorts of skills that you needed to hobnob with the people that you'd been going to school with and that you were going to church with back home. There's a wonderful camp in the Fulton chain called Moss Lake Camp for Girls, which in the 30s and 40s had all sorts of things like that, tennis and a lot of equestrian skills, classical ballet. And the faculty seemed to be largely drawn from aristocratic refugees from Russia.
Really?
Yeah, these Colonel so-and-so with a ski on the end of his name was would teach you from formerly of the Imperial
such
army,
and such, right.
Would be teaching
dressage or something,
right. That sort of thing. Now, that was a very high-end camp. But there was also a very early camp, I think in the 90s in Lake Placid, for women, for girls, that was pretty clearly a finishing school, lots of French and elocution.
So did these camps, are the camps that we know today, and there are scads of them. I got on the internet the other day and went to the New York State Camp Directors Association or something, and there's piles of camps. Are they the same camps that were started in the 1880s, 90s, and 1900s? Amy?
Well, you probably should speak to the early history of the camps, but I'd say no. I'd say nearly all of those early comers are gone now.
I think, not all of them, but you're right. Most of them are. And one of my interests and our interests at the museum is to look at this change over time and see how the programs and the camps have changed and then why. My suspicion is that this emphasis on healthy outdoor life and lots of athletics and that sort of thing changed at most of these camps by the Second World War. And now you have much more specialized camps. And they have a lot more competition for what to do with your summer, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's more emphasis on self-esteem and less on character, if there's a difference.
So they survive for decades, though. I mean, if you're because there's one brochure we were looking at. Which one is that?
The Scroon Lake Camp.
Right, the Scroon Lake Camp, and it's from 1918. And on the back, it has Scroon Lake Camp, Adirondack Mountains, the camp for your boy. And then it says military training, and that's at the top of the list.
And this is 1920.
1918.
Well, there you are.
Right, and then athletics, and then pleasure, and then instruction at the bottom. But military training is right up there. And there's a picture in here of cadets on parade or something like that, and they all have. They look like Boy Scout uniforms with the ranger hat type things. And so I imagine that there was a sort of a boomlet in camps around
in the teens. In the teens there seems to be a big pop of camps, don't you think?
Yes, definitely. And I was reading the big camp directory for the country was a Porter Sargent series, and we have a 1925 edition at the museum. And they talked in there about how a lot of camps had started in the teens, but a number of them had failed by then. And then it goes on to explain what you need to look for in a good, long-lasting camp.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very interesting. Well, the Scroon Lake Camp still exists.
No.
Right? No. Oh, sorry. But some of these camps that do, like Camp Dudley, you could certainly look at what they prescribe for the boys now and what they prescribed before and wonder to yourself if that was why they lived for a long time.
Well, I bet we have some Camp Dudley alums out in the listening area of various decades. Maybe they can compare and contrast on the air. 800-388-6758. 1-800-388-6758. This is North Country Public Radio. We're talking tonight about summer camps, and we'd like to hear about your camp, your experience. Maybe you hated camp.
I think we need to hear from some of those people,
too.
Yes.
Wait, Amy, you have notes on camp.
I do. I have an excerpt I'm going to read from a story that appeared in The New Yorker not 2 or 3 months ago called Notes on Camp. And I think this is the last page of The New Yorker by Mark Liner. And I'll read just a bit. I won't reveal the actual name of the camp I was sent to. Suffice it to say that it had one of those ersatz American Indian names synthesized from the first names of the owner's children, e.g. Natalie, Gabriel, and Kenneth Yield Camp Naga Ken Ken. It was situated in the Adirondack Mountains, across from a fat girls camp, and next door to Word of Life, an evangelical camp whose carillon hymns, broadcast incessantly over a staticky PA system, competed with the whine of outboard motors and chainsaws for sonic supremacy over idyllic Scroon Lake. It was there that I discovered a preternatural aptitude for archery, a talent that had previously gone unrecognized by my guidance counselors at PS 32 in Jersey City. Since I was small, delicately featured, insular, supercilious, prone to outbursts of violence, I slept with my bow in a full quiver, and given to quoting Gerard de Nerval, I had to fight for self-respect at Naga Ken Ken every day, and was most certainly not the proverbial happy camper. I became friends with only two people that summer, a retarded dishwasher and a pockmarked, buck-toothed Alabamian counselor who promised, insinuatingly, to take me to see Yellow Submarine someday, just the two of us. It's all
not a happy camper. We have somebody on the telephone, possibly a happier camper. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Brant Lake, New York, and I wanted to mention the wonderful Boy Scout camp experience I had, Camp Wakpominy, which I believe is on Lake George somewhere, but it was really just an excuse for my parents to get rid of me for a couple weeks.
Isn't it always? Did you feel that at the time?
Well, in a way, yes. But I do remember that when they came to retrieve me, and I was there for like 2 weeks, and, you know, we had been, you know, cleaned fish and just, you know, totally let our... I remember that they insisted that we open the windows on the way home. That was one of our family stories. But they taught us to take our canoe out in the middle of the lake and sink it and get back in it. And, you know, you earned a couple merit badges and stuff like that.
But, that's the best part of camps.
Yeah, but that was more the... You know, the blue collar, maybe upper middle class, that's where a lot of us went to camp, you know, and there was no frills. There was just a bunk and a pond that they called a lake, and that was about it, you know. So.
Well, I had the same kind of camp experience, and I never felt the lack of any amenities at the time.
Right.
We did. Did you do GIMP? Did you make GIMP things? You know what that is? You know, the stuff you make lanyards out of?
Fiber.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, it's
yeah,
just
there were crafts and stuff like that. Yeah.
Martha, that's a girl thing.
Is that a girl thing?
Well, probably. I mean, they had us. You know, you could get different merit badges. You know, you could get your knot tying merit badge and your canoeing merit badge.
Your fire building badge. And
yeah,
stuff.
All that good stuff. You know, so it was an experience that I'm glad I had. Definitely.
So. Let me ask you what decade you went to camp.
Oh, now I'm going to date myself here.
That's all right. We don't know who you are. So.
Okay. Probably you're talking about late 60s, early 70s maybe, is when I was there.
Were they still building character at that time? Did you have to get up early and
well,
take a swim?
It was fairly regimented. I mean, there was a schedule and, you know, you pretty much had your day all planned out for you. You couldn't get into much mischief. Huh. You had to find time for that, but we did. So.
Well, thanks for calling.
All right, you're welcome. I'm enjoying your program.
Great.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Well, he's calling from Brant Lake, which
great camps.
Yeah, well, they're great camps.
That
there.
Raises a great mystery I have, which is Brant Lake Camp still in operation, one of the great enduring success stories in the Adirondacks of summer camps, was started by three counselors, and they were self-proclaimed renegades from Camp Paradox. Paradox Camp, or I forget.
I think it's Camp Paradox.
Camp Paradox.
Right next door.
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Paradox Lake.
Paradox
yeah.
Lake.
Which also lasted a long time, but is not, I think, going
No, it closed now. In the 70s.
Yeah. And my question is, what provoked this defection? what mysterious reason moved them to abandon Camp Paradox and apparently take a whole bunch of campers with them?
And when was this?
This was in, I think, 1916, right around then.
Well, maybe somebody knows and would call us.
That's what I'd like to know, the secret. I know that one of these counselors, these defecting counselors, was Lorenzo Hart of Rogers and Hart.
Oh.
Became one of the
Kitty
great...
Kitty Carlisle Hart's
That's
husband.
That's right.
So among other things.
A lot of musical talent at the helm of that camp and also in the heritage of that camp. It's renowned for music and performing arts. Maybe that's the key to the answer.
I suggest you write Kitty Carlisle Hart and ask her.
You think she'd be straight up with me
Absolutely.
About this mystery wrapped in an enigma?
Well, she might.
She might.
If she knows.
Okay.
800-388-6758. 1-800-388-6758. We have another caller on the line. Hi, where are you calling from?
Hello. I can barely hear you, so I'll just tell you I'm calling from Chateauguay Lake.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know whether you've ever heard of Ernest Thompson Seton or Faye Welch.
Yes.
But I was a camper at Faye Welch's camp, Tanager Lodge, here on Chateauguay Lake in the late 30s and early 40s. My father had helped Mr. Welch start the camp, and our children all went there. So did my sister, and I now have two grandchildren at Tanager Lodge, and they will be finishing their 74th summer season tomorrow night.
Wow.
And I know you've had a great deal of fun with all the foibles of some other camps, but this is a camp that my children and I and my grandchildren couldn't wait to get back to the day after we left at the end of summer. And my grandchildren feel the same way. Since I can't hear you very well, I'll hang up.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your call. Thanks very much for your call. And there certainly, I think, are plenty of people who would love to be. I'd love to be able to go to summer camp now, today, myself.
I liked
back,
camp.
I liked camp.
I really did.
Amy never
it.
Wanted to go home, right?
You never,
I brought up the question of homesickness before the show, and Amy said, I don't know anything about that.
Never heard of it. What's the word?
And Hal, you never went to camp. You're from the West, which...
Yeah, I never knew anybody who did go to camp.
That was
for,
camp. Colorado was one big camp.
It's true. Well, it's true. I lived in suburbia, and Colorado was mostly suburbia, no cities, really. Not like you have out here. And
you didn't
no
have
dust
to go away
dangerous
from this, right?
Away.
No immigrants either, I guess.
Well, I think Tanager Lodge is a good example of what I think is maybe makes Adirondack camps long-lasting, is it really does focus on what we do best here in the Adirondacks, which is the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller on the line. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Canton.
And do you have a camp memory?
Yeah, and I have a question about the camp.
Great.
I went to Racket Echo Camp on Racket Lake.
Mm-hmm. Girl Scouts.
No,
no
it wasn't
girls
a Girl
camp.
Scout camp.
Very high-end girls camp.
Yeah. Well, it was a nice camp. I grew up near New York City, and I went up there a couple of summers, and they had horses. It wasn't on an island, but you had to get there by boat. And I don't know how they got the horses out there. I think they got them there by land, but it was quite a little enterprise.
It's on the point north of the Marion River, isn't it?
I think so.
You could come in from what is now the North Point Road overland, and they do that by snowmobile.
I've tried to find it since then, and I found it, and what was really interesting was that it looked much, much smaller than I remembered it. It was a vast, expansive place in my memory, but when I went back a couple of years ago, it was tiny. And I remember chipped beef on toast and Kool-Aid and really awful things that you had to eat fairly regularly.
Oatmeal.
But I wondered, I think it is closed.
Yes, it's yes. The camp is an interesting example of what happens, I think, a lot in the Adirondacks. It was a private estate originally, and then the owners turned it into a girls' camp. And then about, I think it was in the 70s, maybe late 70s, it closed as a camp, and it's been divided up into several private homes, so it's back in private ownership again.
Because I remember it as having some Adirondack-type architecture, that, you know, the Adirondack-style building, some of the porches and you know, were really pretty typical Adirondack style.
Was it a Durant camp, Hallie?
I don't believe so. I'm not sure about that, but I think the buildings you're talking about are definitely left over from the days when it had been built as a private camp.
Do you remember the boat that you rode around
in?
Yeah,
I do. Well, and it was one of the old...
Fay and Bowen from 1927, right?
If you call me later, I can put you in touch with that boat. It's in Canton.
Wow. Wooden hull boats, because they took us over to church every Sunday. There was a couple churches that you went to, and one was on an island.
That was St. Hubert's, on St. Hubert's Island, the Church of the Good Shepherd, an Episcopal church.
So, I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of other people out there like me that was one of my earliest encounters with the Adirondacks and left a memory that drew me back here eventually.
When were you going to Echo Camp?
It would have been, and again, like the other guy, I'm going to date myself here, mid-60s.
Uh-huh.
I was, you know, 8 to 12, somewhere in there. And it was, you know, I was very terribly homesick at times, and so there were parts that were not pleasant memories, but then there were parts that I really loved in terms of the horseback riding, and we did plays that we put on, productions that we put on, and, you know, archery, all the fire building, outdoor skills, swimming a lot, you know, swamping the canoe, all that good stuff.
And how many summers did you spend there?
I think it was 3 or 4 summers.
And for the whole summer or just a week or
no,
two?
No, I think it was, 3 or 4 weeks maybe.
Uh-huh. Well, call us later and I'll get your name and I'll show you the boat.
Okay.
It looks very different now.
Good show.
Well, maybe it looks like what it did when she remembered it.
Maybe it does. Maybe it does. Thanks very much for your call.
Okay. Bye.
Echo Camp on Racket Lake, which was founded, probably lasted a few decades, right?
Oh, more than, didn't it?
I don't think so. Yeah, I would say because it was Mrs. Williams who started it as a girls' camp, and she's still alive.
Yes.
I mean, it could be
in her
40 or 50 years old. Yeah, maybe 40 years old ago.
It's 21 minutes past 7. This is North Country Public Radio. I'm Martha Foley. With me tonight is Hallie Bond, curator at the Adirondack Museum in Blue Mountain Lake, and Amy Godine, a journalist with an interest in social history, who has been... You didn't really want me to say quirky camps, but that seems to be... I can't get away from that word. It sticks in my mind. Different, you know, camps with a focus, let's say.
We can do some quirky camps, though they're beyond the reach of living memory. There was one very interesting camp that was started by a Scots educator named Thomas Davidson in 1889 named Glenmore. It was called A School for the Culture Sciences. He was a teacher in New York City who brought up immigrant kids from the Lower East Side.
Is this an experiment?
Yes, it was an experiment in moral and cultural improvement.
Uh-huh.
And one of his proteges was a boy named Morris Raphael Cohen who heckled him during a lecture on Marx. And Davidson adopted him, in effect, brought him up to the camp and taught him to read Dante and the original and Plato and Arabic and Hebrew and Syriac and Icelandic, and he became a great educator and author in his own right.
So he was improved.
Very much improved. Mm-hmm. And he got to meet William James and Thomas Dewey and a host of Adirondack notables as well. So he rubbed elbows with the high society up here as well.
So was there a lot of that sort of social experiment feeling about some of these camps? I mean, certainly improvement was part of it, from character building to skills building. But.
Well, usually you don't hear or read of worlds bumping up against each other in quite this fashion, like drew to like in summer camps. And mm-hmm. you don't have Jews mixing it up with Gentiles in camps for a very long time. Jewish camps were a world apart from the self-advertised Christian camps of the turn of the century and the first decades of the century. And in fact, they start in reaction to their exclusion from the Christian camps that advertise high-toned Christian counselors and are very clearly not for this new emerging immigrant bourgeois class or even the sons and grandsons of immigrants. So they start their own thing.
Uh-huh. I want to get back to how you were talking about a string of camps that sort of started from one impetus, but we have another caller on the line, and I want to get your comment in. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Adams Center.
And do you have a memory?
Oh, yes. In the late 30s, I went to a Girl Scout camp in Riparius.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of it. I don't know if it's still in existence, but I have very fond memories, even though as... people were talking, you know, they played reveille and they played taps and it was pretty regimented, but I learned to swim there and I don't even know what the lake or the pond was. All I remember about that is that it was full of bloodsuckers.
Oh,
yuck.
Built character.
Built character, right.
Built character.
Oh, really? especially when you had to dump the canoe.
A little bit of the African queen feeling to it, huh?
But that was a pretty nice camp. I'd be curious about whether it's still in existence. It was a local camp. You know, it was just kids from Warren County, I think.
Where did you live when you...
I lived in Glens Falls.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe somebody's listening in Glens Falls tonight who would remember, or who's living in Riparius now and would know.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
We have a couple of queries like that to pose to people tonight, sort of research questions. Thanks very much for your call.
You're welcome. It's an interesting show.
Thanks. It's 25 minutes past 7. This is North Country Public Radio. We're talking about summer camps tonight, and I want to get back to the founding of that string of Jewish camps.
Well, it
and
starts...
Scroon Lake.
Yeah, I think it starts with a resort hotel in Scroon Lake called the Leland House, which was operated by the Emerson family of some local renown in Warrensburg and Scroon Lake, businessmen and bankers and developers. And one of them, Lewis Emerson, was in partnership with a Jewish businessman and also went camping with him. And I think that's what gave rise to the opening of the Leland House to Jewish patrons. It was one of the very first of the Scroon Lake area hotels to open its doors to Jewish vacationers from the cities. One of them was Rabbi I.S. Moses, who came up from Central Synagogue in New York, fell in love with Scroon Lake after staying at the Leland House and decided he wanted to bring boys from his congregation to camp there. He started Scroon Lake Camp, and that sort of triggered a chain migration of Jewish camps started mostly by city educators, Jewish educators, school teachers and principals around and on the shores of Scroon Lake. Red Wing was one, which was the set of one of the sets, along with Scarron Manor of Marjorie Morningstar, the terrible movie that we all love to hate.
But the story involved, a significant part of the story has to do with going to camp, right?
Yeah.
I figure we'll have to show it as part of a programming for the
exhibit. I guess you'll have to. Now, Scroon Lake Camp is gone.
Scroon Lake Camp was the grandfather of them all in that area, but it is gone.
Are there camps still remaining?
I'm not sure. I think if there are, there are very few. I think there were once as many as a dozen. The last one I visited was Camp Idlewald, another one that was owned by a retired school teacher from the city who was still living there in his summer place above the camp when I visited. The camp itself was untouched. The cabins were still full of the old graffiti, and the kitchen still had the birthday dates of the boys in the camp so they'd know when to make cakes. It was very moving to go exploring in the cabins. Was like a ghost town.
Yeah.
It was kind of haunted.
You'd hear those little voices.
It smelled like camp. It was kind of damp and mildewy and gross, you know.
Kind of like oatmeal-y. And that's what I remember, the oatmeal. And oatmeal and really thin hot chocolate we had for every morning for breakfast.
That watery, yucky stuff.
Yeah.
But we loved it,
didn't we? We loved
it,
yeah, exactly. We have another caller on the line. Good evening. Where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Keysville, New York, North Country Camps. In fact, we just closed our 79th season. There are nine of us sitting around the table listening to your wonderful program.
Uh-oh.
We represent 320-some years of experience in summer camps.
Wow. So we can ask you just about anything, right?
Well, that or I can pass the phone around to somebody else in the room. That's true.
So how long have you been, you personally been?
I personally have been involved in summer camps in the Adirondacks since 1955.
And how has programming changed?
Well, we haven't changed our programming all that much. We've added some new activities such as windsurfing and a ropes course. But we still do a lot of the very traditional activities. A big focus in our program at our camp is trips, both mountain trips, canoe trips. We've added mountain biking in recent years.
That's great.
And some sailing that we didn't once do except on our own lake.
But are you still fairly regimented? Do you start with reveille in the morning?
No. As a matter of fact, it's not a particularly regimented camp at all. We don't... have reveille every morning or taps in the evening except on special occasions. We awaken the camp with a large bell mounted on top of the main building.
Well, that's loud enough.
We emphasize a lot of personal choice. Our campers get to select the activities that they want to go to, and only certain activities are required, and those on a fairly limited basis.
Has it always been like that?
It really has always been like that. It was a camp that... you probably hear people in the background.
Uh-huh.
The origins of the camp were in the progressive traditions of Teachers College, Columbia University.
There you go.
Back in the early 1920s. And we've adhered to those same philosophical principles ever since.
I have a question. Who started the camp? Were they teachers who came up from
yes.
the city and were camping and fell in love with the area?
I think that's an accurate assessment. The founder, whose name was Culba Gooker, was associated with the Lincoln School in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And to my understanding, he brought about 16 of his students in 1920 from the city up to rented property close to Keysville, but not the site we're on at the moment. And was very successful. In a short period of years, the group grew and grew in size. And in 1925 or 26, we moved to the property where we now are.
Do most of the kids come from upstate, from Plattsburgh area, or from downstate?
I would say the early campers came largely from the greater New York City area, but as time has passed, our population is more and more diverse. We had children here this summer from as far away as California, and we're much more diversified geographically than was once the case.
That's great.
I heard second and third generation.
Well, that's certainly true. We have many second-generation children and some third-generation children.
I think that's something you see periodically in camps, too. It becomes a real family tradition. Well, the earlier caller from Chateauguay mentioned that.
Well, we're expecting 150 alumni tomorrow evening for the weekend. And
wow.
Some of them will come from as far away as Georgia and Texas. And it's quite remarkable the dedication people have to their summer camp experience.
Now, Camp Red Wing had a reunion, even though the camp itself has been closed for some time, but it had a Red Wing reunion in New York City a few years back, and all the returning women were given a set of jacks. Are you going to give all the returning campers jacks?
No, but they're going
it's
to
a good
get
idea.
T-shirts.
Everybody will get a current 1998 camp T-shirt who attends this reunion, so they will have something to take home.
That's good.
Thanks very much for your call. Is there anybody else?
Thank you.
They were shouting at you behind you. Is there anybody there who's... What was that?
Well, it was one of our junior members, but I'm not sure we should repeat it over the air. But it was positive.
It was all positive. Great.
We have both a girls' camp and a boys' camp. Whippoorwill is the girls' camp, and Lincoln is the boys' camp.
Right.
Hey, I have a question. Since you have a group of people there, can you sing us the camp song?
Hear, hear.
We're singing a song.
Gather around the phone.
One, two, three. Stand up and cheer. Stand up and cheer for old Camp Lincoln. For today we raise the orange and blue above the rest, above the rest. We know that our boys are fighting, but we are bound to win the fray. We got the team.
We got
the team.
Not to slight the girls' camp, but that was the boys' camp song.
Can you do the girls' camp?
Yeah, there are enough girls there to sing the girls' camp song?
Well, if you'd like.
Are you ready for this?
Girls. Well, now you have both.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Those are happy campers.
Those are happy campers.
They know how to party hardy, wouldn't you say?
I guess so. It's 26 minutes before 8. If you'd like to join our call-in on summer camps, maybe you've got a camp song you could sing us. Hallie says the museum has an LP of Camp Dudley songs, but she didn't bring it tonight. So if you want to hear more camp songs, you'll have to call 1-800-388-6758, 1-800-388-6758. This is North Country Public Radio. I'm Martha Foley. Hallie Bond is a curator at the Adirondack Museum, now preparing a future exhibit on children's summer camps in the Adirondacks. Amy Godine is a journalist with an interest in social history, which includes summer camp songs, apparently. That was a great rendition,
mm-hmm.
A great song. Maybe we could have a little song competition, you know, if we get enough calls.
The American Campers Association, for some years anyway, has had song competitions, so that sometimes you read in the literature that such and such a camp won the best camp song contest for whatever year it was. So there must be lots of music out there.
There must be. I have you were talking about a reunion of Red Wing Camp, mm-hmm. which they gave out Jacks. Mm. I love Jacks myself. We played a lot of Jacks at camp.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to Karen Cohen yesterday, who went to Deerwood Music Camp when she was a girl. That was on Upper Saranac Lake. It operated from the late 40s to 1957 when the man who was the director, Sherwood Keynes, died suddenly after the camping season, and the camp never reopened. But that camp, they're thinking of putting together a reunion, actually. That camp was a music, drama, dance camp. It had faculty from the Pittsburgh Symphony, the New York Philharmonic, members of the Montreal Symphony used to come down and play in the orchestra because they had concerts, weekly concerts, started at the Saranac Lake Town Hall, and then the concerts were at the Saranac Inn.
Mm.
For years, and they were recorded. A man named Martin Koop made wire recordings of all these concerts, and they would do with, you know, a bunch of 9-year-olds, Beethoven's Ninth, the Brahms Requiem, these massive undertakings in a weekly concert form with kids. It was insane.
I think it's unusual when you hear of camps that mix it up with the local community that way, and it's wonderful when you do.
She said they used to turn all the kids loose on Friday night in Saranac Lake,
really?
To spend whatever, you know, pocket money they had. Yeah,
I know in Scroon Lake they'd have an annual aqua night when 5 or 6 camps and the Fish and Game Club and I think the Seagull Colony would mm-hmm. all produce an extravaganza pageant
uh-huh.
with all kinds of acted-out scenes and canoes and Japanese lanterns and fireworks. It was something for the community, giving something back.
But that was fairly rare, you say?
I think not that common.
Yeah, so that's one of the questions we're interested in the museum, is looking at the impact of camps on the local community. Both the obviously there was a big economic impact, but this business of knowing how many campers are in the neighborhood and never seeing them is mm-hmm. is another thing I'm interested in, too, because I know today it seems like you never do see these campers, and unless you're in the running one of the establishments where the parents go for parents' weekend or the counselors go on their night out,
mm-hmm.
you might not ever know that the camp is there mm-hmm. unless you know somebody who works at the camp.
Well, you can call us and help us with that question and others. 800-388-6758 800-388-6758. If you're an alum of the Deerwood Music Camp, I can put you in touch with Karen Cohen, and you can contribute to an effort to start a reunion of Deerwood campers.
I think the Long Lake Camp is another great arts camp, right?
Creative arts camp, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very large establishment, and they're doing everything from circus to violin, I guess.
Now, where is, you know, that's another thing. You hear this camp on Long Lake or this camp on Upper Saranac Lake, but as you say, you don't often know where that is
mm-hmm.
unless you're out on the water and you happen to spy, you know, the waterfront.
And now I think the waterfronts may be less distinctive than they were once upon a time. I know that I lived, maybe I'm just not with it, but I lived in Long Lake for about 10 years before I really became aware of the camp.
Uh-huh.
And it's like many of these in a former private estate, so it looks like another big camp.
You know, when I was doing my little internet tour of the New York Camp Directors Association, I clicked on the Long Lake Camp, but it didn't connect. And somebody had called me and asked me if I knew anything about Long Lake Camp. They'd heard the promo for the show, and I was trying to find something out. But you can go. I mean, for people who are curious about these camps that exist, you can go to the internet and go to the New York State Camp Directors Association, type it in, for a search, and you'll come up with a whole list, including, you know, the what the camps offer, where they are. Most of them list their tuition, and you know, boys, girls, that sort of thing, and where their winter headquarters is, which is generally New York City.
I think I'm thinking about it. I might have been just oblivious because I know that one of the most distinctive entries in the midsummer parades in Long Lake is the creative arts kids, who usually turn out en masse and do some things very unlike most of the other entries in the parade.
But the kazoo band is also from Long Lake.
Yes, the kazoo band is pretty distinctive, that's for sure.
Vincent Price was a counselor, I think, I learned today. At Long Lake, I just thought I'd throw that
Vincent
in.
Price. Well, we just read, you were telling us about Buster Crabb, the great swimmer, being
just
having his own camp.
Half an hour ago,
he ran his own camp at Onchiota. And we don't know when, though, do we?
No.
Didn't really say.
Will, the date on that, what was the date of that inventory? Was it the late 60s?
Yeah. I would, another thing the museum is particularly interested in is hearing from not only the campers, but the directors and the counselors themselves. Certainly, in the early period when there was such an emphasis on experimental education, and of course the schedule agreed with the teacher, there were a lot of teachers turning up as counselors, but I don't think that's quite so much the case anymore.
Buster Crabb's camp, in case we get anybody who could tell us more, was called Minaga Lodge.
Named after his children, no doubt, right?
From Onchiota. Boys camp only, and this is 1967 when it was cooking, so there you go.
Pretty recent. 1-800-388-6758. This is North Country Public Radio. It's 20 of 8, 19 minutes before 8, actually. If you have a memory about camp, if you have a question about camp, or you can help us with some of our more obscure questions here, do give us a call. 800-388-6758. Amy.
You were asking about quirky camps.
Yeah.
This one plays it so by the straight and narrow, I think it's actually quirky. Camp Cedar Isles in 1937 in its brochure writes, Camp Cedar Isles is not a place for problem campers. Our interest is in the normal boy. So I think that's a quirky camp.
That's kind of quirky.
It's too quirky for me.
Back off, guys.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, at least they let you know where they were coming from.
That's for sure.
I don't think I'd send my normal boy to a camp who
wanted only normal boys.
Right, right.
And the other one is this camp called Black Point on Lake George near Ty. This is a camp, this was a farm camp where boys milked, they fed the calves, they ran power equipment, they pitched the hay. Basically, they ran the farm. Yeah, their parents paid for authentic farm. Sounds like an Adirondack kibbutz.
It sounds really character building, doesn't it?
And the motto of the camp is, where there is no vision, the people perish. I mean, that's a real upper, huh?
Thanks for that, Amy. This is North Country Public Radio. We have a caller on the line. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Long Lake.
Are you at the Long Lake Camp for the Arts?
No, I'm not, but I have a little correction to make and then a bit of a reminiscence.
Okay.
I just heard somebody mention that.
I thought that was Phil.
A counselor. In fact, he was a counselor at Camp Riverdale, which is another camp on Long Lake, founded by the proprietors of the Riverdale Country School in the Bronx, I think around 1910, and Vincent Price was a counselor at that camp. And that camp folded in the early 60s, I believe, and then became another camp, Adirondack Wilderness Camp, which is my connection. I was a counselor there for many years, for 6 years, and then it folded. And I just wanted to get Adirondack Wilderness Camp mentioned here because it was a wonderful camp, and we used to spend almost all of our time out in the woods. The last couple of years I was a counselor there, we would take two-week backpack trips into the high peaks, which I think is a pretty long trip.
Starting right from camp?
Sometimes we'd go to Keene Valley, be dropped off in Keene Valley, and walk all the way back to Long Lake.
Oh, wow.
That's a really long camping trip.
It sure is.
And you don't come in contact with much of urbanization.
No, we would not see much of anything except other occasional campers out in the woods, and every 5 days we would have a rendezvous along the side of a highway to pick up more food.
Did you run into Vincent Price?
No, he was there long before my time.
Oh, okay.
I never even found his name written on the wall.
Huh.
But Adirondack Wilderness Camp was a wonderful camp, and it was one of several camps in the Adirondacks. They have a real tradition of serious backpacking expeditions and canoeing, and a lot of kids, I think, developed a real affection for the outdoors through these camps. It wasn't just archery and riflery in camp. A lot of the Adirondack camps would spend a lot of time out in the woods, and I think a lot of kids from throughout the East United States had wonderful experiences in the Adirondacks through these camps.
I think that's true. A real good friend of mine was at Camp Dudley for several years, ended up as a junior counselor or something, whereas I might have thought of Camp Dudley as sort of sports-oriented, they used to take fairly long wilderness trips as well, I think a week or something, with the more senior campers. And then they also had a very strong theater component to sort of balance that. So it was a very broad sort of experience.
Well, Dudley is a famous camp. And the reason they're still alive is because they've done such a good job, I think.
Yeah, probably.
It would be interesting to explore further your comment about affection for the wilderness, and I would say affection for the Adirondacks in particular, in looking at the background of people who really care about wilderness preservation in the Adirondacks, right up to people who are politically active in that field, and see if they had camp experiences too.
It's developed
a constituency for the.
I think it probably did.
Are you still in touch with fellow campers, and are any of them in the Adirondacks today?
A few are. Bob Petty, who's the founder of the Pendragon Theater, was a counselor at that camp the same time I was. I know that a few people will show up here in Long Lake now and then, and want to go down. The property is now owned by the state. It's Forest Reserve land. We'll camp out down there, and then a lot of people stay in touch, and a lot of very good friendships develop down there, as they do at all camps, I think. It's a great place.
Well, thanks very much for your call.
Sure. Thanks for a great show.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's 7:45. Still time to call us and share your camp memories. 800-388-6758, 800-388-6758. Well, there's another thread of inquiry for you, Hallie.
I spend plenty of time down there myself. That's a great beach that's now open to the public.
Oh, yeah?
At the other end of the lake, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot.
That really is a different kind of camp, the one where you actually get out and learn something about the woods.
Well, you think so? I think that will be an interesting thing to look into if we can, because it seems, being a non-camper and coming to this without having had the boondoggle experience and everything else, Jax, I would just assume, well, of course, if you're going to have a camp in the woods, you're going to go out and be in the woods all the time. Isn't so?
No, I went to camp, and we learned archery, and we learned how to paddle a canoe, and we learned how to play tennis and make popsicle stick crafts.
But you were in New Hampshire.
Well, there you go.
Does it apply?
But, boy, an expedition was an overnight. That was the big deal. That was as wild as it got.
Well, they probably had to keep the clients in mind, too, because not every person, or certainly every kid, is ready to go.
All right, we were wusses. You can just say it.
You preferred boondoggle.
And it was New Hampshire. It was called GIMP where we went to camp.
Me too. It was GIMP at my camp too. We have another caller on the line. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Saranac Lake.
Do you have a story for us?
Yes. I'm from Malone, New York originally, and I went to 4-H camp in Mountain View probably when I was 11, so that would be 35 years ago. And I met a girl there who is a very good friend of mine to this day. We got together just the other day for lunch. So I'm very grateful to that experience for having met this good friend. But other highlights of having gone to 4-H camp a few seasons was remembering filling up squirt guns at the water fountain and having the camp director catch us. And his name was Mr. Shock. And we made boondoggles and sang campfire our songs by the campfire, and also developed crushes on our camp counselors.
Oh, absolutely. Camp romances are another thread here, I definitely think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you started to get, 11- and 12-year-old campers.
Yeah, that's how old.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, innocent fun, but a real, real good time.
And Mountain View is still active.
I think it is.
Yeah, sure.
4-H Camp Overlook.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to share.
Thanks very much for your call.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
That's another line of inquiry. Terrible things you've been caught doing at camp. Everybody's got a few of those.
Yeah. Boy, I heard a terrific one just this afternoon from a friend who shall remain nameless. It had to do with 4th of July and sparklers in the cabin and the counselor.
Let's discuss
you
that.
You heard the same story. Counselor approach. So They stuffed the sparklers down the knot holes in the floor.
Oh, ouch.
Guess what caught on fire?
The floor.
Guess who was kicked out of camp?
The
Our
friend.
Nameless friend, Hopefully. But he knows who he is. He's listening even now.
Maybe he'll call in.
I don't think so.
800-388-6758. We do have another call on the line. Hi, where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello, this is Rebecca. I'm calling from Long Lake Camp for the Arts.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling.
I'm a counselor there right now.
Great.
You're just about to wind up your season, right?
Yeah, the season ends on Saturday.
So what? Tell me about a day at the Long Lake Camp for the Arts. Like, well, when do you start?
We have morning meeting every morning. We wake up with a bell, like the other guy said.
At what time?
7:30.
It's too early to even know what time it is.
Yeah.
And then you have morning meeting?
Yeah, we have a big morning meeting, and all the different counselors announce what they're going to do in their shops for that day.
So what kind of shops are you talking about?
There's a bunch of art shops with different art activities, and there's tons of different music shops. There's a counselor for each instrument, and there's also circus. Circus is really big here, and so is theater.
Great. Are you in the? Do you do circus stuff?
No, I teach photography.
Great.
There's a circus teacher here, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I attended the circus last year. It was a blast.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, the kids are really good. What was it? I saw the first triple somersault off the trapeze ever done in a children's camp in the country or something like that.
Wow. Do you want to talk to the circus instructor?
Well, go on with the day. Do the kids get to pick their own activities then?
Yeah, they get to pick there's seven periods every day, and they get to pick their activity for every period.
Do they have to be artistically inclined to be, do you have to be accepted at a camp like this, or can just anybody come and experiment?
I don't think you have to apply, do you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a counselor here that was actually a camper here.
Mm-hmm.
And
you just come.
What's that?
It's a private camp, though, isn't it?
It is a private camp, yeah.
Sure.
And you just come, and then you get to experiment with photography and pottery and circus trapeze swinging?
Right. Most of the kids that come here have an interest in mind before they come, though.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of geared towards theater or dance or art mm-hmm. or circus.
And go ahead.
I was going to ask if you do other things, more traditional Adirondack camp type activities, like what goes on the waterfront. I know you have a big Hobie Cat down there, and woods activities. Is there any of that offered?
Yep. Yeah, there's a jet ski, and they have swimming, open swimming every day. They can choose to swim instead of going to the art shack or something.
Okay.
Do you learn how to canoe and things like that? Do you learn the rules of canoeing and so on?
I don't think so.
No. Any camping, overnight camping?
Yeah, they have tons of overnight campouts each week.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go off somewhere, or is it on the grounds?
I think we have the camp owner owns some property across the road, so they hike over there. But sometimes I think they might take camping trips out on some of the surrounding mountain areas.
How many children are enrolled in any one session?
150 each session.
Wow.
There's three sessions.
And how long are the sessions?
3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
But some of the campers stay for 9 weeks.
Wow.
I'll bet they don't learn tin can craft or model shipbuilding the way they did at Adirondack Woodcraft Camp.
We do have a woodworking class here, though, and the wooden animal shapes are very popular.
That's great.
Well, thanks very much for your call.
Thanks. We're really enjoying listening to your show. It's been fun.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. I love the conversations, when there's several people in the room and there's the shouting in the back. You sort of wonder, how good is our contact? This is North Country Public Radio. I'm Martha Foley. With me tonight is Hallie Bond, curator at the Adirondack Museum, and Amy Godin, a journalist and social historian. And we're talking about summer camps. It's 6 minutes before 8, so we've got about 5 more minutes to go. Our number is 800-388-6758. I have a query to pass along from our general manager, actually. Ellen Rocco came to a camp. She doesn't know where this camp was. I don't know how old she was when she came to camp, but it so impressed her that she would like to track it down. It was called Blue Mountain Lake Camp, and she went there in the 50s, and she thinks it was in the Adirondacks. But none of us here know where it was or if it was in the Adirondacks. So if you out there know, do give us a call, 800-388-6758. We have a caller on the line, sounds like maybe a camper. Where are you calling from?
New York.
Any particular town in New York?
Bloomingdale, New York.
Bloomingdale, New York. Are you at camp?
No, not right now.
Do you go to camp in the summer?
Yeah, I went to Camp Sunrise.
Uh-huh. And for how long did you go?
For a week.
For a week. Was it good?
Yeah. I did horse and canoeing.
Did you get homesick?
No.
No? How old are you?
10.
10. Is this the first summer you've been to camp?
No, I've done it before, but this is a new camp.
Uh-huh.
Oh. I climbed Pharaoh Mountain Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Are you going back next year?
Yeah.
You liked it?
Yeah, I loved it.
What was that?
I loved it.
Oh, good, good. So did you do any camping, like sleepouts or anything like that?
Yeah, we went to the lean-tos one time, and we slept out one night there.
Did you have campfires?
Yeah, every night.
Did you make s'mores?
No, not really.
Oh, no.
Did you play jacks? We're talking about all the things that we remember from when we were campers, which was a long time ago. And did you have sing-alongs?
No, not really.
No?
Capture the Flag?
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
Did you have to get up really early in the morning?
Yeah, about 7 o'clock.
Did you swim in the morning?
No.
No? So are you going to go back to the same camp next summer, do you think?
Yeah.
Great. Were the counselors nice?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good camp.
Sounds like a great camp. Thanks very much for your call.
Okay.
Did you have a camp song?
No.
No. Okay. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I have a question.
Yeah.
For anyone calling in the final moments. This is from Phil, who called earlier. It's, which camp provided parents with an etiquette card so they'd know how to behave when they visited their children at camp? We're wondering.
There was
some
one?
Some of the points were, don't be too emotional, basically, and don't kiss your child. Is that the sort of things they were asking you to do?
Or don't get nasty in front of the kids. Who knows?
I think I've
don't
seen
go
that
skinny
etiquette
dipping,
card.
Don't,
yeah. Oh, that, yeah. Didn't want to encourage the kids to
and
want to
don't bring
out.
Them candy. That's the big no-no.
Or too much money.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Another thing.
Or
makeup. Or stuff like
nail
that.
Nail polish. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Don't interfere with the camp culture, basically.
Right.
Because that's a big part of what camp is all about. I suppose if you have a child for 8 weeks, it becomes important. You know what? That's odd. Does it strike you as odd? You...
I mentioned that
like
when we
first
met. Like
8 weeks
yeah.
away from your family?
And you know what I was like?
Great.
It was great.
Fabulous.
Here's another side of camp life we ought to know about. Parents out there. Did you ever have a shock when you got the child back and realized this kid wasn't the same kid you sent away to camp in big, significant ways?
Yeah. Because a kid could grow a lot depending on their age. I mean, you could send a 12-year-old away in the beginning of the summer and you could come back with it. A different-looking kid, even, in 8 weeks.
Well, the first caller had to be fumigated when he, remember?
Right. They smelled like fish.
That's right. That's a change.
They didn't have a regiment of dips in the lake, I guess.
I guess not. We have time for one more quick call, 800-388-6758. Otherwise, it's time to wrap up our show about summer camps. I'd like to repeat our queries about the Deerwood Music Camp and... Really, you can call the station after the show or tomorrow or something or email us. And if you didn't get a call in tonight, do call us with your remembrances about summer camp.
And the Brant Lake defectors from Paradox, we want to solve that mystery too.
Okay.
And the protocol sheet.
And the protocol sheet for parents. And Blue Mountain Lake Camp, which was, Ellen says it was co-ed, kind of progressive, a lot of New York City kids. Non-denominational. It wasn't a Y camp or a Girl Scout camp or anything like that. It was just a camp, and her geography was not strong in those days, so she doesn't know where it was.
She doesn't remember the state, right?
And she doesn't remember the song either. No, mm-hmm. And she thinks it was probably in the Adirondacks, but could have been the Catskills.
Mm-hmm. Well, in general information and background and documents, the Adirondack Museum is always interested in seeing anything you've got.
Yep, your badges.
Our collections are not that strong at this point in this area, which is one of the reasons we want to do the exhibit. It's an important part of Adirondack history.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Hallie Bond, curator at the Adirondack Museum in Blue Mountain Lake, not home, apparently, of the Blue Mountain Lake camp.
I'll be mortified if it was.
And Amy Godine, a journalist and has an interest in social history and based in Saratoga Springs. I'm Martha Foley, and this is North Country Public Radio.